Hello and welcome to another episode of Decentralized with Cointelegraph. My name is Joe Hall and I'm a Cointelegraph reporter who loves to travel the world reporting on Bitcoin. For the past few months, I've toured the world's biggest Bitcoin conferences. In the red corner, we have Bitcoin Miami at about 15,000 attendees on the east coast of the United States. And in the blue corner, we have Bitcoin Prague, Europe's largest Bitcoin conference to date at roughly 7,000 attendees. Now, during these conferences, I spent my time interacting and interviewing Bitcoin and crypto key opinion leaders, inquiring as to the future of ordinals, whether Bitcoin maximalism is on the wax or wane, and whether scaling Bitcoin and more broadly achieving greater levels of Bitcoin adoption are realistic goals. Here is a snapshot of some of those interviews, commencing with Christian Anders, the CEO of BTC.X, one of the world's oldest Bitcoin exchanges operated from Sweden.
So nice to attend a Bitcoin conference because it's not just a conference, it's like a big Christmas dinner. It's the big family. I call it the big family. My small family is my wife and daughters, and the big family is the Bitcoin community.
Christian had some interesting insights regarding the state of Bitcoin adoption in 2023, given that he drives around Europe in a Bitcoin-themed Tesla. You've got to see it to believe it. Here he is.
Who's next? There's been Coinbase, Binance. What's next? Is it Ethereum or is it another exchange?
If Ethereum continue to play ball, I think they will be fine. When it comes to exchanges, it's hard to say. I mean, crypto.com could be a potential next target. They're active in America. I have a more Swedish perspective and I can see what's going on there. So it's more, I could see that similar approaches is happening in a smaller scale and the government in Sweden is cracking down on exchanges there to just make it difficult to operate.
Like, how would you say Europe is warming up to Bitcoin and crypto?
Yeah, Europe is interesting because you have the MiCA regulation that is coming and it's already decided. So it gives us a framework. And it's also interesting to see that you have the regulation coming, which will bring clarity. And then you, on the same time, you have the governments who wants to, for example, in Sweden, they don't want to issue new licenses for crypto companies. They cannot stop it, but they can postpone it. They can say it's not good enough and stuff like that. So it's a power going both ways. And from that perspective, Europe need to do a lot of more lobbying work and come together and work with the regulators, but also pushing the regulators. I drive the Bitcoin Tesla, and when I drive in the cities, I see grumpy old men snoring at me like that. And then I see kids, and they're like, sometimes they actually do the wave when I pass them. And old men, I'm sorry. The time is against you. The time frame is with the kids. And they love it. Family and kids, it's the best of future.
Next up is Lule Demise, the CEO of eToro US, a popular trading app which, of course, offers crypto trading.
The fact that, you know, Gensler seems to be pontificating and, you know, delaying in his decision about whether or not these other tokens are securities. How is that to navigate, given that it does seem to be quite unclear right now?
Tricky. But I mean actually all of it, meaning that our industry also has to have better practices and better self-regulation, better. So I think it's all of the, like, we need to be able to elevate our activities and our conduct to the next level. That also includes better imagination when we're regulating it. But I mean all of that, right? So learning from the lessons of what's happened in these last 2 years, not misdiagnosing those lessons, though, because I think that's very dangerous sometimes. When you misdiagnose something, you start turning into sort of fervor rather than calm, reasoned analysis that allows you to build the house on stronger ground.
How can the crypto industry sort of thrive and, you know, make progress in on the shaky ground?
Well, I think sometimes when the temperature is cool is when you should invest in infrastructure, right? So whether that's infrastructure of the culture dynamic, the regulatory dynamic, the self-governance, these are times to sort of regroup and really build for when the next round comes. So I actually don't think it's a bad thing to have some breathing room. But it's not a mystery why the globe is what it's doing, right? Like, you know, all of our central bankers have raised interest rates, and you know, we're trying to cool for right reasons, right? We're trying to cool inflation. So, but one of the things I often talk about is people make a mistake of thinking the now that they're living in is the rest of history, and it never is, whether during the highs or the lows. And so I think this is the opportunity to make sure we harden things that should be hardened and not harden things that shouldn't be hardened.
To contrast Lule's comments, we have Eric Dale, the host of the Bitcoin for Breakfast podcast and the founder of the Northern Lightning Conferences in the Nordics. He spoke to me with one of his daughters perched on his lap, so do excuse any potential baby noises.
Well, since this is a Bitcoin conference in Europe, I would maybe focus less on the ecosystem and more on how ready it is to take on the challenges that Europe is facing. Because obviously there's a lot of great companies here. They're building amazing things that we can have fun with, that we can change the world with, that we can liberate people with. But Europe is a continent that faces challenges of war, of migration, of government overreach. And a lot of people see Bitcoin as a way to get out of Europe, as a form of exit. And I'm here to say that Bitcoin is also a voice, you know, and I see that represented at this conference a lot in the thoughts that are shared on stage and the narratives that people are talking about, that we're creating a new narrative around Bitcoin in Europe. And if I don't know if you can call ideas an ecosystem, but there's definitely an ecosystem of ideas that is being developed at this conference that I think will influence Europe for a long time.
Following Eric is Dr. Wolf von Lahr, the CEO of Students for Liberty.
What is your most pressing concern about the state of the Bitcoin economy in 2023?
It's not necessarily about the Bitcoin economy. So Students for Liberty is a worldwide international network of pro-liberty students that defend the ideas of liberty. So I know a thing or two about how to build communities. And I care very much about the Bitcoin community. But what I'm seeing is often at conferences, most of the time people talk about very similar things and there's not like many new ideas coming. And I think that is correlated to the bigger problem, which is that I think that the Bitcoin community is maybe not as welcoming, because like if you go to these events, you see mostly like guys, and like many of them are like very techy or like very hardcore or like very brutal in like what they want to accomplish, and like they're very passionate about Bitcoin. But on the other hand, like I see sometimes they're not like as welcoming, because we also have to think and reflect on ourselves to see like how do we come across to others, like people who are not like us, who, and let's call it out, like Bitcoin is mostly like white males, right? In their 30s and 40s, right? How do we come across to people who are not like us? And is this like welcoming? I'm not talking about like the DEI shit or whatever. And if somebody or anybody wants to create like a community, we need to be careful about like, okay, do we know people that know Bitcoin and can they explain Bitcoin well? But also, are these good people that you want to have a beer or coffee with? Yeah. Instead of like somebody that just might be like rude because you happen to have bought like Ethereum at some point or so forth. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we need to take into account, but those are difficult conversations and not easy to you.
Yeah.
It's so rich, like how anyone can make a contribution. I mean, most people don't know that, but the first ever hardware wallet was just founded by Czech people, right? And that's amazing. Slush and Stick, Slush Pool, most people know this. And these people are just here and they're so humble, such nice guys, but they've built like a massive ecosystem in the Czech Republic and now for the world. And I think the opportunities right now are still so immense because we are early. Most people don't understand Bitcoin, and we need help from everyone who is interested in the ideas of Bitcoin.
It was interesting to observe that the toxic maximalism culture, or simply maximalism for the sake of maximalism, was being called out at both Bitcoin Miami and Bitcoin Prague. But what better way to complement Wolf's comments on the matter than with a crypto enthusiast, Munib Ali? He's the CEO of Trust Machines, as well as other hats where he helps to build on Bitcoin using different protocols. Here he is in Miami explaining the fee situation or the fee spike on Bitcoin.
Yep, fantastic. And so what I wanted to do with this interview was to focus on the problem, which of course you addressed it in your speech earlier today on stage. I'm going to talk about some of the solutions and then also talk about some of the trends that you're seeing with these solutions, and then also what Bitcoin can learn from the ETH ecosystem.
Yeah.
So what is the problem we're seeing in there? Or is it right to call it a problem? The fees going up, right?
Yeah. So I think there are two sides to it, right? Like one is that when the Bitcoin fee market goes up, it puts a lot of stress on the chain, but
it puts stress on the Bitcoin L2 solutions.
Right.
So now Lightning needs to be mature enough for, you know, we need to figure out how to close channels that even in a high fee environment and other challenges as well, right? So, and then if the fees keep going up, then Bitcoin as an ecosystem and as a community will need to figure out, okay, how am I going to use my Bitcoin? I'm never going to pay like $20-$30 for a transaction, especially if it's an under $100 transaction. Like, that's insane, right? Like, I can't pay that much for under $100 transaction. So that's where the L2s come in. Mm. And this is the story that we've seen on Ethereum before, right? Like, where when Bitcoin, Ethereum L1 became very expensive to use, then there was a lot of R&D and infrastructure building and different types of L2 solutions came up, right? So there, it's almost like there was an ETH L2 wars, right? Like, ETH L2s are a category. Just like there were these faster L1 wars, like Solana, Avalanche, these people are trying to build a better Ethereum.
Mm.
They're like, folks who are building better L2s. And I think that competition is very healthy in a way because people are trying different solutions. And what has happened is, back in 2017, I always keep coming back to that year because this is when Bitcoin, I think, closed off the gates on developers after the block size wars.
Mm.
And Ethereum became very friendly to developers. Like, hey, everybody just come here. And initially, everything looks like toys and we would make fun of them because they were more so like mature devs on Bitcoin.
Now, Jameson Lopp is a Bitcoin OG, probably the most OG Bitcoiner I spoke to for this podcast. He shared some sobering comments regarding self-custody and the state of Bitcoin in 2023.
You've just done one keynote, presumably a keynote at the Bitcoin Conf itself.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be a different atmosphere this year. And as a technologist, as a builder, this is the vibe that I'm looking for. I've actually, over recent years, I've tended to scale back on going to the quote-unquote mainstream, like large conferences, because they tend to feel a lot more hype.
Bitcoin are very sort of overlapping, but how do we get that adoption number, generally speaking, higher?
Yeah, and this is the problem I've been focused on for like 8 years, which is, once again, going back to trade-offs, the default path for most people to get into Bitcoin is through centralized exchanges that are surveilling their customers, generally because they are legally required to do so. And people tend to stop at that point. You know, they sign up, they create their exchange account, they may buy some Bitcoin, and then that's it. And it's not entirely clear to me if it's that they just don't even realize that self-custody is a thing, because most of these exchanges are not going to be promoting self-custody to their own customers. But even those who do understand that self-custody is a thing are afraid to take on the responsibility that is associated with that. So this is why I've spent the past 8 years now focusing on self-custody, because it's a difficult challenge where the game is stacked against us. You know, custodians have the ability to offer a level of convenience and usability because it's just a web app that is far easier for people to get into. There's very low friction. You could, of course, argue that AML KYC is friction, but I think people are generally used to that and they just sort of take it at face value. So we simultaneously need to make self-custody both easier and make it so that people are comfortable and confident that they can do it without screwing up. But also what I want to see is more avenues for people to be acquiring the Bitcoin, participating in economic transactions where you're just receiving Bitcoin. And that's actually one reason why I think Nostr is so interesting, because it is a Lightning native integrated type of protocol. You know, people can basically sign up on there just by generating a public key and by creating a Lightning wallet.
Ultimately, maybe we'll be regulators that you have to hold your own keys. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Or we do it with better teaching, with better tools, with regards to teaching better UX. And with regards to that number, the 0.125%, I know it's like sort of fingers to the wind adoption levels. What would you say is the level of self-custody right now? And do you think that's improved since, 8 years ago? I mean, I know that Mt. Gox, for example, this is 11 years ago, that showed just how few people held their keys. Yeah, if we compare that with the Luna, FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, you name the exchange that had custody issues, it seemed like there was a lot of people that already held their keys there at that point. Is it better than it was in the past? Are we on the right track?
My general take is it seems like the majority of actual coins are likely in quote-unquote self-custody. Mm-hmm. You know, the only way we can really know that is process of elimination. Like, we have a pretty good idea of the holdings of all of the big institutional custodians. And they have a lot, but I think it's less than half. I'd have to go back and check the numbers. But the flip side of that is that I believe if we're looking at humans, I bet the overwhelming majority of humans who believe they own Bitcoin, in fact, own Bitcoin IOUs as home custodian.
It's true, though.
Okay, let's completely change tact. There's obviously, it's a bear market. There's all the Bitcoin infighting. There's a bit of trolling in you, which I've seen it personally, and I enjoy it. I think it's fun, I think. How much should we care about the current ordinals and spats, which seems to have quietened down? I haven't looked at the mempool actually today, but I know that the sats per VBite is 10x lower than it was
right.
2 or 10 days ago. Do we care, or is this going to come back with a vengeance? Are people going to keep minting things and keep consuming block space?
The one thing that I will say is almost everyone who predicts the death of any of these, you know, decentralized mania phases tends to be wrong.
Yeah, true.
So I'm certainly not going to predict that it's over. Mm-hmm. I think we're in a lull, and this is kind of the question that it goes back to the fact that we have all of these cycles, and that some new technology or new application of the technology will essentially be invented out of thin air. Mm-hmm. And the natural result of that is that it will fascinate some people, it will enrage other people, and then a lot of activity will happen. And, you know, everything has its the hype cycles, I guess. Where are we? Are we in like the trough of disillusionment for ordinals and inscriptions right now? And then it sounds like there are some exchanges that may be getting into it. If they do, then obviously that's going to like open up some other floodgates and have like another wave of adopters. And then the question is, you know, will those adopters find it to be amazing and fascinating, or will they grow weary of it and be like, well, that was dumb. And you know, we go back into another trough. So I do believe that there's going to be more waves, there's going to be more activity on the network, but the question is it sustainable? Mm-hmm. And so much like with any of the NFT hype of the past few years, I'm a terrible judge of all of that because I've never really understood the art market. it always felt to me like it was more of a vanity, you know, display of wealth. Type of market. So because I don't find much value in that, I don't really understand it. But clearly, you don't need to have mass adoption. You just need to have a critical mass to create that market. And that's what people are speculating about is there that critical mass? I can look at it from the technological side. And the one thing that I'll say there is the reason I would not be as bullish on like Bitcoin NFTs and at least on the inscriptions or really anything that's taking up much block space is that they do tend to be a lot less efficient than any of the other networks. If you're going to do NFT stuff, then I would think you would probably want to do it on something like Solana, which has a really high centralization, not the same properties as Bitcoin or necessarily even Ethereum, but you can do it for cheap. So if you just want to screw around and have fun, it's probably a decent network for that. So my conclusion from all of that is, at least for like for on-chain stuff and the tokenization things that are happening right now, is that if they do find a like sustainable niche, it will probably be for like really high value stuff. It'll be the OG whales showing off that like, look, I bought all this block space back in 2023 and it's mine and you have no claim on it.
And is Bitcoin a partisan issue now?
It is, which is ridiculous. But, you know, that's more just a result of the political polarization that has happened in America over the past several generations. And, you know, as a libertarian, of course, look at both of these parties and we see that, they both claim to be fighting for our freedoms. And I mean, it's true, but they're fighting for different subsets of our freedoms. So, yeah, it's ridiculous. It does seem the conservative ideology and the Republican Party tends to be more on the freedom of business like economic freedoms side of things. That's why we're seeing, you know, more of the pro Bitcoin, pro crypto stuff in the southern states. And then the liberal ideology tends to be more focused on, you know, social issues, and especially, you know, when it comes to Bitcoin, it's the ESG stuff, you know, they're protecting the environment. Thankfully, we have a lot of smart people now who are able to push back on that and actually make arguments that the incentives of Bitcoin are actually good, you know, for doing things like capturing carbon and using renewable energy and so on and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see if logic prevails, but unfortunately, I am not bullish on logic prevailing.
Thanks for that, Jameson. Now, still across the pond in the US, I tracked down a Stanford professor who was fascinated by Bitcoin and blockchain. I was keen to hear his insights. Here they are.
David Shea from Stanford University. So what is the interest of Stanford University and Bitcoin right now? How is it that you've ended up at this Bitcoin Builders Conference?
Oh, okay. So I'm a professor at Stanford. Okay. And our research lab at Stanford does research in blockchain consensus protocol. And the very first consensus protocol we went deep into was obviously Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was like our first love. We started working Bitcoin. We figured out all the scaling limitations, but there are also the very strong security properties. So we did a lot of analysis on that. So that was the starting of our research. And then we moved on to also do research on proof of stake protocols. And so because of our deep understanding of both Bitcoin and proof of stake protocol, we figured out that there is a very natural synergy between these two types of protocols. And by building an extra layer of protocol that shared the security between Bitcoin and proof of stake protocol, we find that it'll become a very strong, it'll give you a very strong security property. Mm-hmm. So we started this project called Babylon. Mm-hmm. We started last year.
Yeah. Hang on. So you were just saying that the you were looking at the proof of work and proof of stake blockchains, and this is actually one of the things you brought up on the panel today.
Yes.
Is it, let's talk about the proof of stake stuff first.
Yes.
And then let's talk about the 0 to 5G analogy that you were talking about.
Okay. Yeah.
So what was the analysis of the proof of stake blockchains? You were saying today on stage they're weaker.
Yes.
Why is that?
So proof of stake blockchain has two limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Limitation number one is that because it's based on stick, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's based on capital. And it's very hard to raise capital to start a new blockchain.
Yep.
And so if you don't have capital, you don't have capital, you don't get enough security. So security and capital is intertwined. And besides, you build blockchains for an application, not just for building a blockchain for fun. But instead of focusing on the application, you have to now spend a lot of security budget, a lot of your inflation on staking, securing the chain. So that's number one problem. Number two is a second problem is that there is, in proof of stake, the security is a very short range. So we validate a signed block and the secure block. But once people take the stake out of the system, then it loses the security. So on the long range, it is actually much weaker in security than the short range. Bitcoin is opposite. Bitcoin has very weak security in the short range. Like if you say, I want to confirm a block in 6 seconds, that's not possible. The block hasn't been entered into the blockchain. But if you say, hey, I have a block already in the blockchain for 1 hour, whoa, that's hard to revert. So long range, strong security, weak short range security in Bitcoin, opposite for proof of stake. So they're perfect complement of each other.
Complements of each other. And here we are at the Bitcoin Builders Conference, where there is some overlap between proof of work blockchains such as Bitcoin and the proof of stake sort of ecosystem.
Yes.
And why are we seeing more and more interest, renewed interest from proof of stake people in the Bitcoin ecosystem? And why is it happening now as well?
Yeah, so Bitcoin is like an undervalued resource, mm-hmm. I feel. And some people think that Bitcoin is kind of not very fashionable. It's been around for over a decade. And so people start moving on to other projects. But then they realize that Bitcoin has one thing which is really valuable, which is security. And there's no replacement for that. And so in some sense, a lot of these projects that are now building on Bitcoin is to try to leverage off the security. Like Ordinals, for example. Ordinals is an NFT project. What makes Ordinals interesting on Bitcoin as opposed to any other platform? is because they're building on the most secure blockchain in the world.
Are you interested in their popularity?
I'm interested in the popularity, yes, because they sort of raise the interest of people in Bitcoin.
Right.
So I think that is, to me, the most important thing.
What is it about the Bitcoin world that you find the hardest to explain to students as part of your sort of your day-to-day routine of Bitcoin?
Oh, okay. So Bitcoin has just a bad reputation, I must say, of an energy consumer. And I think that's sort of one thing that sort of makes Bitcoin a little bit hard to explain the value to the student. Because they say, oh, you work on Bitcoin, okay, energy, waste of energy, etc. So I think, you know, the thing is that we're in this room right now. The light's on. Hey, that's wasting energy too. Why don't we turn off all these lights and we talk in darkness? So the important thing, I think, about energy is to not only look at the energy, but also the value of why we're using that energy. Well, it goes back to our earlier stage, which is the security. Without the energy, there's no security. Without security, there's no value. And so in some sense, what we're doing right now from a technology point of view is to make full use or make higher value use on that energy. In addition, just benefiting Bitcoin, the chain itself, take this energy and use it to benefit many other proof of stake chains. So broaden the value of Bitcoin to the whole community, to the whole ecosystem. That's our mission.
Thank you, Professor. Next up, HODL maximalist but Bitcoin moderate Dan Held, who's a regular on the Cointelegraph platform. Here's his State of the Region report for Bitcoin in 2023. So how's your Bitcoin Miami week been so far?
It's going great. Like the amount of enthusiasm that's still going on in the Bitcoin space during a bear market, you know, if this is the bear, then I'm excited for the bull.
And has this fee spike been a good thing?
People are free to use Bitcoin block space as they see fit if they pay the transaction fee. And we're seeing those fees come down, but still stay incrementally higher due to, I would say, increased overall demand to use Bitcoin's block space. Largely driven by ordinals, which are, you know, Bitcoin NFTs and BRC20 tokens. This is a good thing for Bitcoin as it solves its long-term security model.
And so what can the Bitcoin community learn from the Ethereum community with regards to scaling? I mean, Arbitrum is almost overtaking Ethereum as the number of payments settled.
I think being open to any Bitcoin layers, what we have to do here is, I think there was a lot of animosity towards different Bitcoin layers that were not constructed in a perfect mindset. Some people, you know, there's been an over-indexing on Lightning. Lightning is not a catch-all. Like this obsession with Lightning, like Lightning is great, and I'm not trying to diminish it, but there's an obsession with Lightning. And I think a lot of podcast-type Bitcoiners who weren't technical just kept championing that as the only solution. No, there's other ones, Liquid, Rootstock, Stacks. And we have to be more agnostic and not trying to, as a community, punish people who go work on one chain or one layer or the other. These layers will be used by different developers for different reasons.
Yeah.
For example, the non-custodial Lightning still requires the opening and closing of a Lightning channel. Those transaction fees could be greater than someone's monthly income in countries like in Africa or South America. I think that then you need to push them towards more layer two solutions like Liquid or Rootstock, where they could transact with almost no fees. And then eventually, once they accumulate enough, they could have it be batched in an outbound, you know, a pegged out transaction onto the Bitcoin network. So it was pretty disappointing to see most Bitcoin educators in those regions in South America and Africa, I would say borderline dishonest. They would be borderline dishonest with their misunderstanding and miscategorization of how Bitcoin L1 and Lightning would work and not push people to actual solutions that would have survived a high fee environment. And I think this fee spike is a good reason for folks to go look at different solutions and start to plan around that. They did have 6 years to plan around this, entirely anticipated. So yeah, I mean, I think this is just hopefully an alarm bell that's being rung before large scale adoption occurs to where we can go educate and build tools and applications that are more geared toward the mainstream. So next time won't be as painful of a transition.
Yeah.
But life is all about expectations. And I've been talking about this for a decade now, and I keep coming back to the payments narrative over and over and over again, where people are continually disappointed when merchant adoption doesn't increase, where merchant adoption, we largely see it falling on its face all across the world. You see merchants slowly delist crypto or Bitcoin being used as payment methods. You see people disillusioned with Bitcoin when they try to use it for payments, and it either isn't available, doesn't work, or doesn't solve a problem for them. And so they're like, why did I do that? Why did I spend a Bitcoin on the hamburger? And so, yeah, I think it's a big wake-up call for that narrative, because it's frankly quite annoying on my end, because we defeated this narrative in 13 to 15, the Bitcoin Cash narrative in 17 through 19, and now we're seeing it finally again. And due to the rise of fees, it's crushing that narrative, which is good.
For the base chain.
Yeah, sometimes there's innovative things that are exciting and interesting that kind of change the dynamic a little bit. I think that's why I'm so excited about NFTs and ordinal, you know, ordinals, and which are the emergence of NFTs and BRC20s from those. You know, look, I'm not advocating for people to go buy BRC20s. I'm not sitting here and like, I think they're a very bad investment. I'm not advocating for that at all. But what I saw at the NFT NYC scene in 2022 and 2023, people want to buy and sell digital art at a minimum, right? And who are we to say if that's a bad or good thing? Bringing that activity back to Bitcoin drives adoption. So I think we are seeing new things coming to Bitcoin, and that's what energizes me.
And could you hear just how energized Dan Held was there? Anyway, still in Miami, I spoke to a fellow Brit and another Dan, Daniel Fogg from IOV Labs. Now, he's also building on Bitcoin, but with his protocol, Rootstock.
I would argue that it's not possible today to envisage the kind of interlinking that the Lightning Network might need with Bitcoin in 20 years' time. And if ossification limits the global potential of what Lightning could be, then yeah, that's obviously not a good thing, right?
Oh, that's a really good argument. That's very hard to... Yeah, because...
And obviously the same applies for Rootstock. Lightning is offers something quite different, but the same argument stands for Rootstock and other sidechains and other layer twos that can be built on top of Bitcoin. Again, like, it's still early. We haven't really been getting our hands on the potential for crypto use cases for billions, let alone small millions.
Yeah.
We haven't really got our hands on that yet.
Mm.
That might take years more to actually have scale use cases.
Yeah.
And we don't know what they are because we have to experiment our way there in many cases. We think they're paying, saving, borrowing, lending, retail finance, etc. But there are many other use cases as well. We have to experiment our way there. And if we are held back by a traditional conservative mindset around what Bitcoin could be, I think that's to the world's detriment. So a lot of the people who originally built Rootstock and a lot of the people that we work with in IOV Labs and all across the Rootstock ecosystem are building solutions because they have been at the coalface of economic mismanagement for their entire life, and they want to build a new future. So to come back to your kind of original point about
pragmatism.
Yeah, this will be Bitcoin maximalism and pragmatism and this kind of different approach. And like, that's all good, right? It's a broad church. People can think whatever they want, but like, we're busy building this thing. Yeah. And that's what we're focused on.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, yeah, there's the Puritanism, there's the evangelism, there's all these little subsects. It's progressive Bitcoiners. It's fascinating. But I mean, that's also how this movement grows, right? Because people are able to identify with these sort of subsets within and be like, yeah, that's what I align with. Argentina, is that one of your biggest markets then?
It's where many of the people involved in building Rootstock were born.
Okay.
IOV Labs, we are one of the contributors to Rootstock, but there are many others. You know, we contribute to the Rootstock core code base. We build the Rift technologies on top of Rootstock. And a lot of the people who do that are from Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil,
yeah.
Colombia. We have a lot of people we work with in Colombia. And a lot of the protocols for, because again, Rootstock is very well known in Latin America and Argentina.
Now, before we fly back to Prague, I spoke to Obi Nwosu, the co-founder of Fedi and an OG Bitcoin self-custody promoter. Now, we spoke in the Miami Botanical Gardens, so I do apologize for the wonderful background noises. In this interview, watch out for the Marvel and Dragon Ball Z references. If you get them, great, because I kind of didn't.
What are you most excited about this week?
I'm excited about the energy. Okay. I've been here for a couple of days now, and everybody is really high energy, but also slightly exhausted. And the reason they're exhausted is because they're so busy. There's so much building is happening. So much stuff is coming back to Bitcoin or extending on Bitcoin. So many different projects are coming together. And they're all, by pure coincidence, come together at the same time. And it provides this cohesive vision vision of what Bitcoin can be. And so I'm really excited, especially in a bear market. I've been for a few bear markets now, and this is the most high energy, frenetic, hectic, builder-focused bear market I've ever been in. Everybody has the same sort of excitement, and they're just working around the clock to just to take advantage of it as much as possible. So for someone in the space, someone outside the space, it seems like it's all happened right now. Someone in the space, it's we've known for years that this is all happening. Mm-hmm. And many different teams have been working on carefully adding the functionality and infrastructure needed to make Bitcoin scale to billions. So instead of just haphazardly throwing things out there, seeing how it worked, we looked at what was working, what wasn't, and then architected solutions that would scale to billions. And then we deliver them once, and then it's all systems go. So whether that be having an ability to settle between people at low cost and high speed with Lightning, whether that's ability to be able to have discovery and search and what you would call Web3, but social media in a decentralized manner with things like Nostr, whether that's the ability to even projects that allow people to express their creative interests and desires and see it with, whether it's at all have a desire for assets, whether it's Taproot assets or ordinals or all of these things. Or in our case, whether it's the ability to allow Bitcoin to scale to billions with layer three scaling, extensibility, so it's possible to add functionality far more easily than any other altcoin can add at far lower time, and to have improved privacy, all with a seamless and simple experience. All of these projects are coming together right now. And it's all spells using Bitcoin as this base, this judge, this reliable core, and then adding functionality on top that you choose to add in this commissionless environment, all bringing value back to Bitcoin.
Wow. Okay. So are we seeing the end of crypto? Are we seeing the end of altcoins?
I think, there's still record players in vinyl, right? And there's still some people like tapes and laser discs. So there will never be, if that's from that perspective, there will be a multi-coin future. There will be some people, bag holders, and some cases where you will want to use all blocks. But for most people, they're going to want to use the system that's going to be the lowest cost, the easiest to develop on, the fastest to develop on, the most trusted, the most decentralized. And all of those, it's going to be clear by the end of this year that it's going to be tick, 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 tick for Bitcoin. So we're in, now going from Dragon Ball Z to another deep thing, Marvel. We're in the end game now. I did this for free.
So who's Thanos?
That's Doctor Strange said.
Is Thanos Elizabeth Warren?
And we're at the no comments on that. But I think we're in the end game. And but the battle, Bitcoin, and say even crypto, these are ideas at the end of the day. The software is an idea that you first written down. I've just made that up.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. And it has brought into people's minds the reality of, and that's the same for any blockchain, that at scale, with billions of users, and that's the point we were trying to communicate last year, with billions of users, fees at the base layer are going to be high. Whether this is a temporary thing or not, now is beside the point. It demonstrates what happens when fees are high, and you realize that many existing systems break, and then you have to re-architect. And when you go through having what you have to do to re-architect, you realize that what you need, Bitcoin as a base layer, is going to have higher fees. Lightning as the settlement layer. You might think about it, if you had altcoins or similar things, cross-chain bridges, just much more reliable and they don't crash or get hacked. But perceptually similar other than the hacking part. And then instead of a dozen or so different competing, conflicting and complex rollups, you have hundreds of thousands of compatible and connected and cooperating federations, all seamlessly connected via the Lightning Network and all backed by Bitcoin. That scales to billions, if not tens of billions, when we're in a world where both humans and AI is all owning Bitcoin and transferring value between themselves.
Plane noises, passport control, have you remembered to pack enough underwear? Here we go, we're back in Prague.
And one of my last interviews was with Ethan Rose, the CEO of Pouch Wallet, which is a Lightning-enabled, Philippine-friendly Bitcoin solution. Ethan has orange-pilled over 100 merchants across the island of Boracay, which is a tourism-friendly space in the northern Philippines. He explained to me about Bitcoin hodl culture, a bit about Bitcoin culture in general, and how tricky it is sometimes to get people to part with their Bitcoin in terms of payments.
Well, I'm not that bearish in general. I guess, so short-term would be the things, short-term bearishness, I guess. So to be clear, I'm always stacking sats at any price, but in the short term, Binance, Coinbase, other exchanges may be forced to liquidate, right, their Bitcoin in order to whatever. If they're fractionally reserving, then yeah, it's very likely that they'll have to liquidate. And if they force liquidate, it'll trigger other forced liquidations. I think right now, like, pretty much the only people, the buyers of Bitcoin are the ones stacking forever, like the Bitcoin maxis, because there's very little hype.
Retail's not here, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Like, I mean, that I'm bullish because of the upcoming halving. The short-term bearishness of like the SEC aggression towards the exchanges maybe causing the price to go down in the short term.
And to round off the podcast in dramatic style, we have a few why are you bullish and why are you bearish responses from two leading voices in Bitcoin. Firstly, we have Samson Mao. It's actually pronounced Mo, so do remember that if you're doing an interview with him. I caught him backstage at Bitcoin Prague 2023.
We're seeing more people talking about new Bitcoin layers, new protocols, ARC. And I think Liquid is getting more traction again. There was some talks from Scott Miller from Sideswap about what they're building on Liquid. And I think people are just understanding now that maybe we should look into Liquid, something that's been functioning for 8 years and not just focus on what's yet to come and does not exist yet. But all these things are very important. We see a very strong role for Liquid in addition to Lightning, because the recent fee spikes showed like Lightning can be brittle. And you need a way to rebalance, and Liquid is a great way to rebalance. So there's new companies popping up doing just that. Bolts Exchange, they're here too. But it's a very exciting time if you're paying attention to the technical part of Bitcoin.
And why are you bullish then?
I'm bullish because everyone needs Bitcoin. And I believe it's becoming more and more apparent to the greater world, countries too, because if you look at everything, it's all failing. The banking system is failing. The legacy financial system is failing. Money is not money anymore. It stopped being money some time ago. Payments can be frozen. Nothing works. Only Bitcoin works. So I believe we're going to see a wave of adoption of Bitcoin in the next 5 years.
Finally, and to cap it off in a climactic fashion, we have Uncle Rockstar. That's not his real name. Who is the head of Bitcoin at Strike.
So I'm not bearish on Bitcoin itself. I'm bearish on people under Bitcoin derangement syndrome. Yeah, their stars will go down. They will not rise. I'm bearish on anything that reduces focus that we have in Bitcoin community, especially like this distraction with shitcoins and SEC and potential for that to cause some infighting. Like, that's what I don't want to see. It's always the same. It's Bitcoiners make me bullish. You're a great example. Your star is rising, you know, recently. And
that sounds like a threat, though.
Well, it all depends how much you focus on yourself and how much you make it about yourself. Because that's, if you look at that common theme with all the people that essentially went insane with Bitcoin derangement syndrome. They made it about themselves. It's like me, I have done this, I have done that. You just look, I don't know, even if you look at block size wars, It was like, I know what should be done.
Bonus question, what did you make of Prague 2023?
I expected it will be good. It ended up being great, amazing, or to use your word, phenomenal. So it's now another conference to add to the schedule. Maybe that's the thing we need to figure out. Like, one conference, 1 month. And then we can have some kind of rock star schedule, or I don't know, and then we can coordinate.
And that caps it off. Now, if you want my views on Bitcoin Miami and Bitcoin Prague, you'll have to go to the Cointelegraph website. Now, I really hope this podcast was interesting or at least useful to you. Thank you so much for listening, and please drop a like or a positive review in your podcatcher of choice. In the meantime, stay humble, stack sats, and I hope to speak to you soon.